Hey, welcome to the program on KPL. You're on this. Not gloomy. I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say this nicely covered and refreshingly precipitous Tuesday. How's that one? Hey, thanks for tuning in. This is Pete, a.k.a. Peter John, or whatever. You can call me. I've been called often John Paul. That's fine. Or John. That's good. Anyways, I've been thinking about, we're looking at the book of Esther here on Rogue Grace, and boy, we're at the exciting part, chapter 5 of the book of Esther, where she has to come before the king. And looking at this story of Esther, you know, you could take any person in the scriptures and go one way or the other. You can lift them up too high, or you can drag them down too low, in my estimation, with the exception of a Daniel, I think. Any other person in the Bible, guy, gal, that has a, at least even a somewhat voluminous excerpt or character study or biographical description in the Old Testament, you could go either way, too high or too low. With, again, the exception of a Daniel, who you can't bring him down at all, it would seem. But with Esther, that's the same thing. And so I'm praying, needing, enjoying God's Spirit in helping me to continue to talk about His Word in a way that doesn't maybe lift her up too high, but neither do... I was talking to my pops about this the other day, and he reminded me it's true. I get to, and in a sense we have to, meet these people in heaven. So as preachers or whatever you want to call guys like me, that's a sobering thought. I'm going to see Peter or David or Abraham or Esther. So how should I speak about them to you at Applegate Fellowship? Interesting. So working through that, but something else right now to begin today's program on this Tuesday. Should you speak boldly or be quiet? Speak boldly or be quiet? I mean, if you had to give your opinion or estimation of what the Bible, the Word of God as a whole, would encourage you to do, considering the stories of the Old Testament and or the Proverbs of Solomon and his wisdom, or looking at the Sermon on the Mount and the teachings of Christ, or the New Testament epistles and what they have to say, what side would you go on? I'm just asking, me, maybe you. Is it better to speak boldly when it comes to things that you believe, or to be quiet and not necessarily be one that just says everything you feel, even what you believe? Here is something I'd like maybe for you to think about. It's helped me as of late. I sense, or I believe, you could very well be one or the other naturally. And that's a good thing. That some of you, I know this from knowing you, would tend to be the first. Speak boldly. You aren't afraid to share the truth and or what you believe to be true. You're not ashamed. You're not going to quibble, or you're not going to beat around the bush, as the old adage goes. You speak the truth. And that's a good thing. To be bold. To do what they did in the book of Acts so often, you know. You might imprison us, Peter and John said to the council, to the Sanhedrin. You might want us to be quiet, but we have to give an account to God, they said in the book of Acts. So that might be your tendency or your personality. Good. Others of you that are listening, I know and I believe, are the other. You're one who knows, understands. There's a reason I have one mouth, but I have two ears. And just as much as the other person could make their case to speaking boldly and confidently and not holding back the truth, you can make the case to speak wisely. You can point out in the Proverbs. You can look at in the Scriptures, in the New Testament, where James says, be slow to speak and quick to hear. You realize, you understand that words have meaning and weight, and to use them, your words, not just arbitrarily or emotionally, but thoughtfully. That's good. So which one, if you had to answer this right now in your car or your living room, wherever you're at right now, what would you tend to answer? Who are you? Are you one that speaks boldly? Or are you one that is a person who listens quietly? Because you can make, you could make the case for the validity and the importance of either or both of them in the Bible. Yep. Both of them in the New Testament. Yep. So here is what I'm saying. Here's my thought here on Rogue Grace for you, if you want to take this assignment. Whatever one you tend to be naturally, you know, the one that you feel, the one that you could say, yeah, that's where I come from. If I'm not going to, try to edit or whitewash or censor who I really am, that's, I'm either the one that speaks boldly or listens quietly. Okay? Whatever one you tend to be of those two, I would suggest to you that means you need to be more conscious. Me too, talking to myself. Make a greater effort to discipline yourself to be the other. Because you're already going to speak boldly if that's who you are. Sharing your opinions, your thoughts, even what you know is to be the truth. Good. Or you're already going to be the one who is going to reserve your thoughts. You don't want to be a fool. You don't want to hurt people unnecessarily. Right? As it's been said, you've heard this quote. It's better to let people think that you are a fool rather than open your mouth and confirm it. You've heard of that one, right? Well, maybe that's your attitude. I'm not going to open my mouth unnecessarily. Good. Which one do you tend to be? I would suggest to you that means you need to get to me too. Discipline ourselves, motivate ourselves to be the opposite, to do the other, to pray about, Lord, help me to fill in the blank. Be a gentler person who is slower to speak, wiser with my words, quicker to listen to what someone else is saying. Don't you think that could help in a marriage? If you did what I'm saying, whatever one you tend to be the other, because I would suggest that your spouse could very well, whether they're saying it or not, and it's to one degree or another, but your spouse is feeling it. They wish if they could have it their way, prayerfully, I hope that they're not picking on you about it, or I hope that they're not, railing on you about it. They might be, for all I know. But I think your spouse, mine too, would say, I wish he or she was more of, and it's the opposite of what you are. So if you're a speaker, an opinionator, is that a word? A vocal person, I would think if I could sit down with your honey or your mister, your spouse, without you there, and if they could be give them some truth serum so that they can't help but be honest, they would say, yeah, if I could write my ticket, maybe I wish my honey or my mister would be a little bit more of, and it's the opposite of what you are. Me too. So if you tend to speak boldly, they would, if they could write your ticket, if they could mold you like some Play-Doh, want you to be a little quieter, to listen a little bit more, right? As dudes, as husbands, we're often told that we're to listen to our wives in, you know, conversations that you hear or articles that you read. There's always this emphasis. They don't want you to come up with a solution. And that's what we want. They want someone that just listens. How often can you hear that? Well, maybe that's where she's coming from in your relationship, because you're always coming up with a solution. And so she would like you just to listen. So it might be that, or you might be one who is quiet, a listener. And your spouse, your mister or your missus, would say, I wish you would speak up a little bit more. I wish you'd tell me what you're really feeling. Or I wish you would say something. I wish you would communicate. Right? So you can just take that in a marriage. But I think it's in a truth in an overall thing as well. In any given relationship or just as a personality. Whatever you tend to be, I would challenge you to exercise, stretch yourself. I'm challenging myself out loud right now as well. And that's the problem. I have to do it on the air. So I can't just do it with, you know, in my car. I have everyone's listening right now, or whoever's listening. Is someone listening? I don't know. But don't you think that's, why am I saying that? One reason is, don't you think that's who God is? And more, in a sense, personably, that's who Jesus is. Where am I going with that? Well, the Lord, our God, is holy, right? We sing that at morning worship today. He is holy. As you know, what one thing that insinuates, one thing that refers to of God being holy is that he lacks nothing. Whole. He is holy. That means he's, in the things I mentioned to begin this segment, he is both. He's not either or. He's both and. He is one who will speak boldly the truth, his word. He'll communicate perfectly. But he also can be quiet. He can be silent. Ask the psalmist or the book of Ecclesiastes or what have you. He can be bold and vocal like no one else. I mean, he speaks and the world exists. Or Jesus talks on the Sermon on the Mount and we're still talking about that to this day. Or he can be quiet, as Jesus was when he stood trial and answered not a word. Or as the prophets of the Old Testament would say, like a Habakkuk, why are you so quiet, O Lord? He's perfect, though. He's whole. Unlike me or you, he doesn't tend to be more on one side or the other, or, you know, overbearing on one and lacking the other. God is one who perfectly speaks boldly, yet also perfectly can be quiet or reserved. He's God. Me and you, we're not. Now, God is holy, right? He's, if you would, well-rounded. When I say well-rounded, I should say perfectly rounded in terms of his persona, his character. You and me, though, are not. We're not perfect, at least. So know yourself. Know thyself, as the old adage goes. If you tend to be one, discipline yourself to be the other. If you tend to be one who speaks your mind, good, but discipline yourself to maybe hold some of those thoughts more and more. If you're one who holds your thoughts, keeps it inside, good. Discipline yourself to communicate a little bit more freely. Your spouse or your coworkers will appreciate that. And whatever side you choose to do. I think for an example of this might be, well, I could use all kinds probably. But how about Paul the Apostle? Let's use him. His letters are bold. I am not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's what he writes in Romans chapter 1. It is the power of God unto salvation. Oh, that's just one verse. You know Paul. Romans, Galatians. I wish those circumcisers would cut themselves off, he writes. He's bold in his writing, right? Yet, was that how bold he was if you were to shake his hand back in 50 AD? Nope. The New Testament, the book of Acts, Paul's own confessions in his letters states he was a man who was more reserved. He was a man that wasn't that way person to person unless he made that decision. He naturally was a man, believe it or not, which is hard to believe, who tended to keep reserved. He had such passion, though, both before he knew Christ and then after he knew Christ, that it would be something which he would overflow from. But if you saw him face to face, he could tend to be more reserved. He writes, he makes hints that he alludes to in his letters. So he chooses to write boldly. He would say to the Corinthians, I write much bolder than I speak to you. He says that very thing. And I appreciate that example he sets of what we're talking about right now. He's saying, I tend perhaps, he would write to the Corinthians, I tend to be more reserved or kind or gentle. Good. But I'm choosing to stretch. I'm choosing this other side to emphasize being bold to the point of even offending for the truth, for the Lord. That's one example. So whether it's Paul or you can choose so many others that are good examples of this, but I'm encouraging me through this, maybe you, to get out of your comfort zone. That's what I'm encouraging you to do. Ever so slightly, maybe. To whatever extent or whatever degree, but what one are you? Maybe you might want to consider this just today in a conversation or two. Stretch yourself and do the other.
After searching all these years, and the man that I saw, he wasn't at all who I thought he'd be. Well, I was lost when you found me here, and I was broken beyond repair. And then you came along, and you sang your song.
Last segment, we talked a bit about, well, when it's just, I'm using that very charitably when I say a bit. No pun intended, because we're talking about speaking or mouths bit, but speaking boldly or being quiet. And little did I know, but it's now hitting me as I'm looking at my notes from the book of Esther, just how much that has to do with her. But I have some a couple other thoughts on Esther chapter 5. Maybe if you would, at least to me, the pinnacle of the book in so many ways. She gets all dandy dressed up to come before the king with her royal robes. Hopefully we'll get to that. But first things first, as my dad said a couple weeks ago. I'm saying that, though, a bit with tongue in cheek because maybe you read the headline, and that's what I want to get at right now. About Yellowstone, did you read this? Pretty awesome. Yellowstone National Park, there's a geyser. Not Old Faithful, it was a different geyser. And according to the headline, it quotes, it quote, this geyser barfed up, end quote, trash. This geyser barfed up trash. Because this particular geyser, the news article reads, you can look it up. It's called Old Ear. It hardly ever erupts. The last major eruption was 1957. So it decided a couple weeks ago to erupt, this particular geyser, and barfs up trash, listen to this, dating from the 1930s. So included in that was a shoe heel. Well, that's to be maybe predicted, but dozens of coins. Get this, a beer can, Hams beer, for the record, which isn't, I don't think, even made anymore. I don't know, but. And then a vintage pacifier. And so the curators are wanting to keep these items that came out of the geyser, these items from the 1930s. And they're going to have like a sign or a quote, please don't use the geysers as trash cans. And they say, because the next time Ear Springs erupts, we hope nothing comes up but natural water and rocks. So they're going to use this kind of as, you know, a cool museum of sorts, but also an example. Please look at the trash you put in these geysers is going to come up. It's maybe 50, 60 years from now, or in our case, 80 years from now, in this case, I should say. Aren't you glad that through the grace of God that we don't have that kind of geyser for each one of us? That geyser of the past? Because we would. I would. You would too. When ultimately, actually, you stand before his throne apart from Christ, that moment by which you stand before him to give an account of your life, the geyser of your past is going to flow, that which happened 80 years ago or whatever it might have been. So those old beer cans and pacifiers of the past would come up. Oh, yuck. I'm glad that it's pure water because of what Christ has done. I need that. Oh, how grateful I am for that. And I bet you that you are too. So I don't know what kind of day you're having, but aren't you glad? It could have been a whole lot worse. It could have been a whole lot messier.
Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, on earth as it is in heaven. Yeah.
us this day our daily bread. Forgive our debts as we have forgiven. Forgive them and lead us not into temptation. Deliver us from the evil one.
So the book of Esther, chapter 5, I'm going to read how it begins. Now it came to pass on the third day. After all of that drama in those first four chapters, one thing leading to another, even apart from the name of God or Yahweh even being spoken or told of, all of these events and chapter 5, it seems as though genocide is about to take place. The Jewish people are on the brink of a massacre, being obliterated at the hands of evil, of Haman. But it says it came to pass, or as a newer translation states, now it came about. How I love that. That no matter what kind of hurt, difficult, or bad day you might be having, it will always come to pass. Hang in there. But I love this particular chapter. I'm going to call it Esther chapter 5, Mission Possible. There you go. Not Mission Impossible. This woman is on a mission. And I think a lot of what we had talked about earlier can be applied to her. She knew when to be quiet. She doesn't even mention she's a Jew. In fact, she makes the conscious effort to not let that be revealed. But now she's about to be bold and say, I am a Jew, and my people are on the brink of genocide. And she's going to bring about salvation. She is going to be a precipitator or a vessel of God. She's going to be even a picture of Christ. You can make that point. You can make that case. Esther's showing me it's not wise all of the time to be blunt, to blurt out things just because. And here is how I come to that conclusion. Because she's about to invite that evil man Haman, related to the Amalekites, who this rivalry between the Jews and Haman's people going back 1,000 years. She's going to invite him to a meal with the king. And it's there she's going to bust him. See, she knows, okay, well, it says, it came to pass in Esther 5 that Esther put on her royal apparel, stood in the inner court of the king's house, and the king sat upon his royal throne. And it was so when the king saw Esther, the queen, standing in the court, that she obtained favor, or literally grace, in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter, so that Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. And the king said to her, "What will you want, Queen Esther? What is thy request? It shall be given to thee up to half the kingdom." Man, she must have looked good, right? And Esther answered, "If it be good to the king, let the king and Haman come this day to the banquet I have prepared for him." So she sets up a dinner. And it's going to be at that dinner that she saves her people by outing that she's a Jew. And now she is on the precipice of disaster. And that's going to incense the king, as the story goes. But all this takes place not when she's all gussied up, beautiful, dressed up in the public court of the king. First, she invites the king and the evil man Haman to a private meal. And it will be at the private meal that all this gets accomplished, that the victory takes place. Because she knew it wouldn't be wise just to blurt it out right there. But rather, not in the king's court, not in front of all of his counselors and maybe other nations and representatives. No, just in a private conversation. Oh, the Lord wants to have a private conversation with you, the King of Kings. You are his bride. Things that you can talk to him about that no one else even has to know. You can pour out your heart to him. What Haman, evil, or difficulty, or addiction, or problem are you facing? You can pour that up to him or out to him. You can come to the meal, the bread, the wine, the elements of communion like we have every day here at the Applegate Fellowship. But here's the thing I want to wrap all of this up with. Oh, we just made a bunch of points, but Esther said the right thing at the right time, didn't she? She could have said the right thing about Haman and genocide and danger. She could have said it at the wrong time. Right when she walks in with her beautiful robes on in the court of the king, she could have said the right thing, but at the wrong time. And it could have been a disaster. So instead, she sets up this private meal and says the right thing at the right time and saves her people. So going all, there's a theme that I think is quietly, unintentionally being worked out here. If you can even follow along, I don't know. It's a theme for me, at least. You can say the right thing at the wrong time, can't you? Can't I? You might have been right, but you said it at the wrong time or in the wrong way. As I've said often, if you say the right thing, but in the wrong way, then you're wrong. Or if you say the right thing, but at the wrong time, then you're wrong. Even if what you say is right. If you say the right thing, but you're rude, then you're wrong. So Esther shows us this beautiful wisdom of saying the right thing at the right time. And she saves her people. Don't say the right thing at the wrong time. Say the right thing at the right time. Goes back to our segment at the beginning of the program 10 hours ago that I'm sure you're still tuned into after all this time. But if you tend to be bold, learn to be quiet. If you tend to be quiet, learn to be bold. I think if, like Esther is showing us these things, you find that perfect balance, you're going to say the right thing, not at the wrong time. You're going to say the right thing at the right time.
Oh,
There you go. Round of applause. And it's not for my radio program, I don't think. Hey, thanks for tuning in. We've talked about Queen Esther, her wisdom. Saying the right thing at the right time. That if I say the right thing at the wrong time, or if I say the right thing at a rude time, I'm wrong. She shows me the wisdom of saying the right thing at the right time. May the Lord give you that same wisdom. How? We talked about, if you tend to be quiet, maybe it's time to speak up. If you tend to speak up, maybe it's time to be quiet. Esther shows us that great example. Thank you for tuning in. Tomorrow night, Bible study at 7 o'clock with Pastor John. God bless you.